Good morning. Happy Monday. Happy June 1st. I hope you're having a great day. The sun is looking to try to burn through those clouds, and back by popular demand, we've been catching up off the air. The current sheriff of Bristol County, my friend and yours, Paul Heroux, Democrat sheriff. Where you been, Paul?
A lot of places. I've actually been to four countries since I've seen you last.
Nice.
Belize, Oman, Qatar, and United Arab Emirates. So I took a three-day, long weekend in Belize. That was the end of February. And then just a month ago, from April 24th to May 4th, I took my first vacation in 2 years.
Right.
Because the Belize thing was just like I went away for a 3 day weekend.
Yeah.
But I went to the Middle East for 10 days and visited Oman, Qatar, and UAE. And it was like business. I went to both sides of the Persian Gulf, Strait of Hormuz.
Right.
It was quiet. I've got video of it. I put it on my Facebook page, and I took a lot of pictures as well. But yeah, it was actually really quiet there. That was something I've been planning since before we attacked Iran in the end of February. That was something I started planning and probably looking at between October and January.
We had the sheriff of Bristol County, Paul Heroux.
It's been
a little bit, but that's all right. So you've got 33 recruits that graduated from the academy, the largest in years. Next academy begins in July, and there's another one in September, I understand. Mm-hmm. Getting more offices online sooner. Talk about that.
Yeah. So the class we just graduated had, 33. I don't know if that was the biggest or if it was among the biggest. We've started a couple of classes with 39 since I've been there. And then there's always attrition. People drop out. Yeah. And so that we graduated those 33, put them online. Hopefully that helps reduce the forced overtime. Mm-hmm. It won't help in the first month because we don't force them to do overtime in the first month. We kind of ease them into the tough job. But then we have another class starting in July, which will be another 25 people that start. And then we have another class that'll start in September. So we're really trying to beef up the numbers. Even though we're hiring all these COs, we were down so far. And corrections everywhere is down people. So I'm not taking a dig at anybody. But we could be easily hired 100 new officers, and we'd still have some forced overtime. The issue, though, is the attrition rate. It's pretty high. In the first year and two, if you graduate 30 people, you might have 10, 12 of them drop out, quit in the first year.
It's not for everybody.
It's not for everybody. It's a tough job. It's a really negative environment. People are always trying to one-up
you.
They're in jail. Yeah, exactly. And the number one reason for the attrition, though, and I've done surveys on this, is the forced overtime. It's not the only reason, but it is the most frequently cited reason.
Well, I know this from speaking with now retired officers. A lot of these young people, to their credit, prefer time off to a bigger paycheck.
Yeah.
And it's just a lifestyle choice, values.
If you are starting there, you're making $100,000 a year with a high school diploma.
Right.
You're starting there that's a lot of forced overtime. You're getting forced three times a week. And it's a tough job that you're getting forced to do. And, I sometimes joke, you're going to make $100,000, $110,000 a year without even volunteering for overtime, but you're not going to have a chance to spend it.
Right.
So it's a tough gig. But we are doing everything we can to bring in more people. And I frequently say, if you don't like the work conditions, talk to the union about that, because pretty much all of the work conditions are contractual. So that's something that people have to go through the union to address.
We have the former mayor of Attleboro, who's now the sheriff of Bristol County. Sheriff, there's a lot of talk about municipal finance these days, and you still live in Attleboro. You're paying taxes over there. Mm-hmm. You have a beautiful zoo over there. We have a great one here. I recently went to see the mountain lions at Buttonwood Park. You're in no danger of wrestling those mountain lions away for Attleboro. Talk about what's going on at that zoo over there.
Yeah, so I was mayor for 5 years, and I'm also happy to say that during my 5 years as mayor, in the last 35 years of Attleboro, I'm the only mayor not to have any layoffs. So it was just how you delicately balance the budget.
Right.
And a municipal budget is very, very delicately balanced, and because there's so little revenue to work with. Mm-hmm. But you know, budgets reflect priorities.
Correct.
Period. That is full stop. You spend money on what's a priority to you. And if you want to move money around and spend it over here or over there, and, you know, take it from one place and spend it. And that's kind of what happened in Attleboro. The zoo was looked at as a for-profit industry, like enterprise, but okay. It's not. The city zoo is a city department. And it's subsidized, you know, like every other city department, like the library, like the police department, by taxpayers.
Yeah.
And it's a recreational service. So the argument was that the zoo wasn't sustaining itself, so it should we should phase it out. But by that logic, you could say the library is not sustaining itself because we're not bringing in enough late book returns to pay for all of the salaries. The right. police department is not paying for itself because they're not giving out enough speeding tickets to people to
not yet anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, they, but it's not a for-profit business. We have a recreation department, then you have the zoo, and you know, the zoo is one form of recreation, but then you have the fields, which are another.
How important is a zoo to a city?
This zoo is central to, like, a big part of our city's identity. Yes. It's been there for 100 years. Everybody that lives there has visited that zoo. Everybody has a lot of memories at that zoo. And when you're trying to balance a budget, and I balanced 5 budgets with no layoffs, even during COVID when revenues were down, when you're trying to balance a budget, the wrong thing to do, and this goes for, and I'm going to speak beyond Attleboro now, the wrong thing to do is balance a municipal budget on the backs of anybody. And so, and I know, for example, that healthcare costs are going up everywhere. Mm-hmm. In Attleboro, they went up 8%. In Boston, I think it was in the double digits, in the teens somewhere. But there are, what you don't want to do, and this is my opinion, and this, again, budgets reflect priorities. What you don't want to do is say, okay, the healthcare costs went up, so what we're going to do is we're going to lay people off. I don't, that's just very short-sighted.
Okay.
There are 3 things a city manager or a mayor can do, and these are things that we did. You can either cut benefits, because some of these municipal healthcare plans are very generous. Like the one in Attleboro, way more generous than the one I have at the state level. It's one of the state levels garbage compared to what I had in Attleboro. Attleboro was the Cadillac plan. So you can cut benefits. That's one thing that will help reduce costs. So if costs went up 8% in Ottawa, for example, or whatever, like what was it in New Bedford? Do you even know? Let's just say it was 15. I'm going to make up a number. Okay. Let's say 15% is probably a lot. You know, you can say, okay, if we cut the benefits, that will make it less expensive. You can also increase the employee contribution. Mm-hmm. That's another thing. And a third tool you have is to then tap the healthcare trust fund. Okay. So those are 3 things you can do to ease that increase. But then you also have your local revenues. You get what you get from state aid, from the Chapter 90, which gives you the roads and sidewalks. You get your Chapter 70, which is the schools. And that is set by a formula, and that it goes up and down with how much the state gives. But then you also have your local receipts. Mm-hmm. Those are your excise tax, your parking tickets, mm-hmm. You know, property taxes, stuff like that. And that's limited by Prop 2.5.
Yep.
But the thing is, though, most municipalities only project what their revenues are going to be by about 90%. Some of the very conservative ones might say 87% or 85%. And what I mean is, whatever last year was, let's just say, I'm going to make up a number. Let's just say last year's local receipts were $100 million.
Okay.
And, you know, so this year, like in 2026, we can only say, well, we're only going to take in, even though we took in $100 million, this year we're going to budget for $90 million. And I'm making up numbers right now.
Yeah, I get it.
Because a lot of municipalities do is they budget conservative. Then that extra $10 million, when the actual receipts come in, it ends up being free cash,
right.
Which it's not. People say, oh, they get angry when they hear free cash. What free cash means is free to be used,
yes,
on any government, like any legitimate government purpose. So what a municipality could do is, instead of being so conservative with its local receipts and focusing on 87%, 90%.
It's estimates, yeah.
Go up to about 95%. Now, the DOR, the Massachusetts Department of Revenue, they don't recommend estimating above 90. That's the recommendation. You know, say keep, estimate 90%. It's nice and conservative. It gives you a healthy buffer in case they come in a little bit lower. But you do have that 10% buffer. Okay. And if you want to go beyond 100%, if you want to say to the DOR, actually, we're expecting 102%, you have to justify it to
okay.
them. But anything that is not like projected for the budget then becomes free cash. And if you have these massive free cash certifications year after year, you are being too conservative with your revenue estimates. Yep. And that's money that could go into your operating budget. Instead, it's going into the free cash, which is just like a surplus account, which right. is different than stabilization. Those are two excess, you know, accounts. The stabilization is, think of that as like your bank account, what you save, your free cash. Think about that's like what cash you have in your pocket. And then right. you've got your budget, which is just how you pay your bills, like, mm-hmm. Recurring. But hopefully that makes some sense though. But you do have those, like when the healthcare costs go up, you can cut benefits of the current employees, you can have them raise their contribution, and then you can also tap the trust fund, and every municipality has these. That's one thing. But then you can also play with the local receipts. And if you're too conservative, you're not going to have enough money. You have, and the opposite of being too conservative and being liberal with it, it's being more realistic mm-hmm. with what you're actually going to bring in. Because if you're too conservative, you end up with a lot of money left over that isn't accounted for in the budget, then it's just, you can do whatever you want with that. But that's those are jobs you might have been able to save right. if you are a little more realistic.
We have the current sheriff of Bristol County, Democrat Paul Haru here. Sheriff, how would you, I know you're not in this role currently, mm-hmm. but how would you save or maintain, improve the Capron Zoo over there in Attleboro?
The way I was doing it and the way the mayor before me, I'll give credit where credit's due. Republican mayor, Kevin Dumas, yeah. the person I ran against for mayor and then, beat. I continued what he was doing. So he was an excellent mayor. And this is a Democrat saying this about a Republican. He was an excellent mayor for his 14 years. He was the second longest serving mayor in Attleboro history, youngest ever elected. Just because I ran against him, it doesn't mean he did everything wrong.
Right.
So what he was doing, which I continued to do, was to take the employees of the zoo off of the revolving account, which is basically ticket sales, and treat them like we do every other city department and put them on the city budget. Their city employees pay for them out of the city payroll. Mm-hmm. And this is a recreational department. And what's happened is that the money has been taken from the zoo, like the employees, and it's been put in other departments, which created a deficit. And so what I would do is I would just, and when I was there, I would continue to do what I was doing, which is you basically treat it like you do every other department. You fund it through the city budget.
Okay.
And you don't treat it, that this is the key. Again, budgets reflect priorities. You don't treat it differently than anyone else and say, well, the zoo is taking money away from the schools, or the zoo is taking money away from the library. Well, you could argue, well, guess what? The library is taking money away from the zoo, or the library is taking money away from the schools, or the recreation department is taking money away from, so right. They're a city department. You can't think of it like it's a private business, but basically it's, when I was there in my 5 years, we continued to do what Kevin Dumas was doing, and that is, sometimes we'd move a full employee off of the revolving fund onto the city budget, mm-hmm. and we would just baby steps. Sometimes you move half of a full employee's salary.
Right.
So half of it would be paid for with the revolving account, with the ticket sales and gift shop sales.
Sale of stuff. Plush monkeys yeah,
exactly.
and things like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes you move a half an employee. Sometimes it's a full employee. Sometimes it might've been two employees. It depends on the year. But by doing that, once you put those employees on the city payroll, that is by definition sustainable because the city revenues are sustainable. They're consistent.
Right.
Whereas the ticket sales fluctuate a little bit, and the ticket sales should be used to pay for stuff like, capital improvements.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the Friends of the Capron Park Zoo.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah. The Friends is a nonprofit. And a lot of zoos have nonprofits and friends, but this is, again, a nonprofit to a municipal organization. We shouldn't be depending on a nonprofit to run or fund our zoo. The Friends, when they raise money, the Friends of the Capron Park Zoo, when they raise money, that money should be used for like a one-time capital expense because their donations,
like
that
buying a rhinoceros or exactly. cool mountain lions.
Well, yeah. exactly. Well, yeah, maybe not. We have a very small zoo. We wouldn't have anything that big there.
Okay. We got them here in New Bedford, though.
Yeah, you have a bigger zoo.
Kick-ass yeah. mountain lions.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another thing you could do to save some money at the zoo. We can have a legitimate, like a real conversation
about
the big animals, and we keep those.
Talladega Nights?
Yes.
The mountain lion in there? Yeah. I believe that mountain lion is now at the Buttonwood Box.
Is that right?
I believe so, but I make things up anyway. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure.
Speaking of movies, when I was in the UAE, I went to Abu Dhabi, and you know the movie F1 with Brad Pitt?
I do.
Yeah, I actually saw that car. I got to put my hand on the car that he drives. It's in the F1 track. So anyway,
that's pretty cool.
I digress. You know, you mentioned that.
I saw the mountain lions, which I believe were with Ricky Bobby in the car. At the Buttonwood Park Zoo, they really kick-ass mountain lions.
But there's a lot of little tricks a municipality can do, and I'm not picking on any one municipality.
So you wouldn't starve the animals to balance the budget, one city councilor, a Democrat on the state committee in New Bedford, one do, then the
that
voters
doesn't even
throw
make
her
sense.
Out. I know.
Oh, the vote, good. That's good. You can't. That's inhumane.
Totally.
Yeah, and there's a way to have a conversation about downsizing.
I mean, I may have mischaracterized accidentally starving you, but you want to cut the feed. Which ultimately leads to starvation, right?
You can decrease the size of a zoo through attrition.
Right.
That's one way to do it. If you can't afford some of the bigger exhibits, the bigger animals, if you think it's inhumane, whatever it is.
Right.
But you can't just shut a zoo down and you can't just stop feeding the animals. That's not even a serious conversation.
Right, right. I mean, that's what Saddam Hussein had to do after they hung him. Mm. Right? And now, do you hear about these Colombian, the cocaine hippos?
Yes, I have heard about it. Yeah, because
Pablo hippos.
Escobar brought hippos to Colombia,
and
they're not indigenous to Colombia, and now they're running rampant all over the country, yeah.
And they might be high on cocaine. We don't know. Yeah. They might be high on cocaine. Yeah. Speaking of drugs, we'll get to Ginger Hook when we take this break, then we'll be right back. The very enjoyable Sheriff of Bristol County, Paul Heru, is with us. Stick around.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
You drop her down and fish her wild. Pull it up and drift a mile, then drop her down again. Easy anchor man. Years ago, in another life.
This hour is brought to you by the cold beer and the world's best chicken wings at Rose Alley Ale House. I don't know if it's going to be a good day to sit on the deck, but maybe if you're a duck, I don't know if it's going to rain or not. But if it doesn't rain, head to Rose Alley. And they have an indoor place, so you can sit inside as well. Have the cold beer and the world's best chicken wings. We have the current sheriff of Bristol County, Paul Heru, with us. So, Sheriff, who's Ginger Hook and why does she not work for you anymore?
Ginger Hook is a former employee who
married Captain Hook and went down the wrong road.
She was the librarian at the jail.
Yeah.
And she was caught bringing in contraband for an inmate. And the contraband was about $65,000 worth of K2, which is a synthetic marijuana. So she was caught. She pled out to that. So she didn't go through a formal trial. And she got 2 years probation. And so that, you and I were kind of dancing around talking about
this
publicly for many months.
Right.
But once it became public, I could talk about it. And yeah, so she has now received 2 years probation. And so that was...
You had nothing to do with that decision.
No. That's a issue between the DA and the judge, because we did the investigation. We work with state police on that. And once... we do the arrest and, you know, we hand it off to them. That's an issue for the courts to determine how long somebody's going to be sentenced for, how long the probation is. And I think everybody would have rather seen a little bit of jail time, some type of incarceration. But that's not up to us, though. It's just not an authority.
I've never had it happen. I mean, I've never been in that position, but to have somebody you hired do that to you, it's got to be really infuriating.
What really, you know, the thing that jumps out in my mind, I've thought about this a lot, is the trust that you're betraying to the people you work with.
Right.
Because you're bringing in whatever the contraband is, and this isn't limited to her, it's for anybody doing this. You're betraying the trust, and the other people you work with are depending on you to be an honest person and not do something like this. And you're putting their life and arguably your life as well in a little bit of risk when you introduce contraband in, because then you have, you might say, well, so what? It's just a little bit of marijuana, like synthetic marijuana. But then that causes fights between inmates that officers have to break up, and an officer can get hurt during that. Inmates, and it's not just synthetic marijuana that comes in, it's any number of things, but there's, you know, exposing the officers or even the other support staff and, you know, program staff to some of the like the smoke from when they're burning stuff, they're burning the drugs. You're betraying the trust of the people around you, and for what? For money? I mean, it's like, you know, like, have a little integrity.
Once you start lugging for an inmate, that's it. You got to keep doing it.
That's true, because once you do, it's called the, we teach it in the academy. And it's okay. Called the anatomy of a setup. Once you do the smallest little thing for an inmate, they own you.
Yep.
Unless you're willing to come clean and say, hey, I kind of screwed up. I gave this inmate, I mailed this letter for the inmate when it was supposed to go through regular, or I gave this inmate a little extra food, because otherwise this, they're going to tell on you if you don't give them something a little bit more
right. Next
time. And then next time after that, it's a little bit more. And before long,
next thing you're bringing a nuclear weapon into the jail.
And we worry about like weapons coming into the jail. We do worry about that, but it's, it's a problem. And it's something that we spend a lot of time at the academy teaching.
Now Ginger, they'll write a book about her, put it in the library, a cautionary tale, right? The Ginger Hook story. She became romantically involved, my understanding, perhaps with one of the inmates?
We never talked about that publicly.
Okay.
And because it hasn't been talked about publicly up until now, I don't want to comment on that either. So maybe it happened, maybe it didn't happen. But we've remained agnostic and silent in Switzerland on that. And we just haven't said anything one way or the other. So invite her on the show and ask about herself.
Yeah. Can I get her on the show, Sheriff?
I'm sure you can. If you invite her nicely and you say, hey, what was going on? Tell us about it. If I were in your seat,
yes,
I would say, hey, do you want to come on and tell us the other side of the story? Just present it like that
right.
And just, you know, let her have her moment of fame.
Stop Paul Haru from lying about your sterling reputation.
Yeah. I'm just setting up
the conversation, Sheriff.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'm on your side, Ginger. Don't worry about it. We're going to put that sheriff in line.
Well, the only thing that I've said is, like I said, she was caught, which she then pled to. So she did not contest that she was caught bringing contraband in. She took a 2-year probation. And, you know, as far as anything else, I would say, you know, invite her on the program and ask her.
The Office of the Inspector General.
Oh, yeah.
Releasing a report. Within minutes.
Yes.
About your jail. What do you know?
All the jails.
We'll talk about it.
So the state Senate wanted to have all 14 sheriffs, and there are 13 jails. One sheriff doesn't have a jail. That's Nantucket Island. The state Senate wanted to have all of our spending.
Do they still bury them up to the neck on the beach down there and keep them? That's how they keep the prisoners? They just drape a blanket over them in the afternoon?
No jail on Nantucket Island. There's no lockup. They bring them over to Barnstable, I believe.
Okay, not the Vineyard. The Vineyard's got a pretty good jail.
They do, but they have a very small number of cells, though, and those are usually for police officers who get arrested who need to go into protective custody, or politicians, high-profile people.
Yep.
They usually end up at the Vineyard.
Or the occasional wealthy Arab who runs somebody over in Boston, I've heard.
Ends
up in the Vineyard.
Yeah, but you know, it's not like you're enjoying the Vineyard. You're still in a locked cell, just like you any other place. It's no nicer. I mean, you're looking out.
We'll keep it between us, Sheriff. We'll keep what it's like over there between us. Nobody's enjoying it over there. Nobody can just work at a gas station and then go to the beach. No, that doesn't happen.
Not to my knowledge.
No.
I mean, if you sound like you might know something, I don't know about that. But the Inspector General's report, though, the state Senate wanted to have a deep dive into all of our spending. And I'm happy to report that here in Bristol, we didn't get dinged on anything in the preliminary report. And I'm not expecting any dings in the general report that's coming out at 11 o'clock.
Okay.
What they wanted to look at is basically, why are you... The funny thing is that they wanted to look at, why are you spending beyond your budget?
Okay.
That's what they were saying.
That's what the Senate was really upset about, right?
But here's the funny thing.
All right.
The IG came back and said they're really not spending beyond their budget because you guys are underfunding them from the beginning, which is what they claim. So what happens is that I'm going to use my numbers.
Sure.
So to run my jail, I needed $74 million, and that's what we asked for. They then came back and gave us, I think it was like $63 million. And we said, well, we need 74. And they said, yeah, we're going to give it to you in a supplemental budget. So just sit tight. We said, okay, that's what we do every year. We've done that since like 2011.
Yeah, you recorded on that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's happened under Tom, happened under every sheriff. You do the supplemental budgets. So they never fully funded us from the beginning. They didn't fully fund us from the beginning. So then when we spend, and in Bristol, we only do corrections. I don't do anything beyond corrections. So when I came back and said, hey, I need that other $11 million, they said, well, what do you mean? Why'd you overspend? I'm like, come on, you're being disingenuous. And that's what all the sheriffs said all across the state.
Okay.
Some of the other sheriffs, though, were spending money on stuff that had nothing to do with corrections, which, as a politician, they have the right to do. Mm-hmm. You can do stuff beyond corrections as a politician. You can pursue any policy area that you're interested in. That's fair game as an elected person, even if it's beyond the scope of your office, like in corrections, for example, and running a sheriff. The legislature may not want to fund it then. And that's their prerogative. That's their right. Mm-hmm. So they finally came to an impasse, or they finally came head to head, where the sheriffs basically said, well, you never told us we couldn't. This is what the sheriffs said to the state Senate. Again, I didn't have to worry about this because I cut all my non-correction stuff as soon as I got there. But the other sheriff said, well, you guys never told us we couldn't spend money on these programs, these social programs outside of the jail. And the state Senate is saying, well, we're telling you now.
Okay.
But basically the initial like accusation, you're overspending, came back, and the inspector general said, they're not really overspending. You guys are underfunding them from the beginning, which is exactly what they were saying all along.
That's very interesting, Sheriff. And of course, that report from the inspector general, who's expected to be in New Bedford to look at their books at an invitation from a veteran city council, that'll be coming out at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, I got a text message probably about 10, 15 minutes ago from the Mass Sheriff's Association saying, I have a copy of it in my inbox right now. So it'll be a public document. Anybody can request it. But I'm not concerned about there's two things I didn't get dinged on that other people did.
Okay.
One of them was I didn't do anything like Bristol jail. I didn't do anything, not spending on anything outside of corrections, number one. And number two, I also didn't take the extra pay. Did we talk about that?
No. Go ahead.
You know about the extra pay, right?
I do not.
Really? Wow.
Tell me about the extra pay, Sheriff. Okay. I love extra pay. Okay. Like exposés here on the program.
Our salary.
You would call it longevity?
That's what I didn't take, but that is part of it. Our salary, the sheriffs, we don't set our own salary. We're not allowed to. It's against state law. It's called direct dealing. So what we do is the legislature and the governor then decide what the sheriffs are going to make. We don't decide that. Okay. We can advocate for ourselves,
sure,
but they decide. So some of the sheriffs had gotten opinions from the State Ethics Commission saying, well, my employees are getting longevity pay, or my employees are getting the health and fitness stipend. My employees get the educational stipend for having a law degree. So can I get it? And state ethics, according to some of the sheriffs, state ethics came back and said, well, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, these sheriffs.
This is benefits negotiated, if I'm incorrect, correct me, by the unions for their members, right?
Yes, that's
education, right. Benefits,
longevity,
fitness, all that stuff. And these sheriffs said, oh, well, that's mine too.
And they got an opinion, according to the sheriffs I've talked to, they got an opinion from state ethics if that was okay. And according to them, state ethics said, yes, it's okay. The legislature said, what's going on here? We're the ones who set your salary. You agree with that? I agree. I didn't take this extra pay. In fact, I didn't even know about it. But even if I had known about it, I wouldn't have taken it because optics matter.
Right.
And, you know, it's just like I was a state rep for 5 years. I know how they think. That's not – if they're the ones who are setting the pay, then it's probably best to let sleeping dogs lie.
Right.
I've said before, there's no amount of money that's worth bad press. Like, I don't want bad press, so I'm not going to take the money. But so I on those two issues, I didn't get dinged on. And, you know,
what kind of money are we talking about here, Sheriff? Say, like in Barnstable County or Plymouth County, whatever.
Donna Buckley, she and I came in at the same time. Mm-hmm. Over her time, I think she got an extra, like over the last, like, and this was public knowledge. It was publicly reported. I think she got up to like $35,000 or $37,000. And she and I
hear that New Bedford City Council, you guys got rolled,
and like some of the other sheriffs might have got like 7 or 8 thousand, but I think there was,
and it's all pensionable, right?
I don't know about that. I don't think it
longevity
is.
Goes to pension.
If maybe you know more about that than I do. Yeah. So the, but some of them got like 7,000 or 8,000. But again, the state ethics commission said, yeah, you can do this. But the state legislature said, we don't know anything about this.
Right.
And so now they're like the Mass Sheriff's Association leadership, which is just the other sheriffs who we like vote to say you can advocate. They are, you know, they're in the talks with the legislature about what's the right thing to do now.
Mm-hmm.
But I like I said, even if I had known about it, I wouldn't have taken it just because I know how the public thinks. They don't like that type of stuff.
You're the public. You're part of your tax. Well,
yeah, and I knock on a lot of doors to get here. I know how the public thinks, and they don't like that sort of thing. So I, at least mine. But I would never presume to judge what other voters in other counties are going to be okay with because I haven't knocked on those doors. Those sheriffs have.
Not yet. Not yet, Sheriff. This is all fun stuff, Sheriff. We got some people on hold who want to speak with you.
Let's do the phone calls.
508-996-0500 if you want to join the conversation. But we're going to take a quick break.
And ask the tough questions. I like the tough questions.
The sheriff likes the tough questions. Yeah. Stick around.
Dispel the myths.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
This portion of programming on WBSM brought to you by South Coast Health. Advanced medicine, more care.
Tom.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
There on my chest and whispered soft to me. And I come to know the charming ways of a southern belle. She weaved a web so gently and I fell under her spell. As I held Georgia, Georgia and Alabama.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy. We have the sheriff of Bristol County. He always interesting, Paul Haru. So, Sheriff, we got some people on hold who want to ask you the tough question.
Yeah, I like those.
Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning, Chris.
Hello.
Good morning, Sheriff. Gilly Satfield.
Good morning. Thanks for calling in.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
I just want to know what... we have a city council that has a case against you.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been settled or went to court or anything? Like Naomi Carney I'm talking about.
That's public knowledge. And no, it hasn't been settled. I'm really not sure where it is. I mean, these things just take forever to resolve. I really can't comment for two reasons. Number one, nothing's changed since it's been in the paper, and I'm not supposed to comment on ongoing matters.
No, I understand that.
Yeah, but it's still out there, though, and I'm believe me when I tell you this, I'm not concerned about this at all.
Okay, no, I understand that because, you know, the thing that gets me is when she's going with the age discrimination. You know, she's the same city councilor in city chambers that Tokel Pimentel, we're looking for somebody younger. So that's the part that really gets my mind. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I hadn't heard about that.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, I'd forgotten actually about that lawsuit. 508-996-05, that's how you can get on the program. You're hosting the Sojourn 250th flag in 2 weeks before it goes to D.C. Talk about that.
Yeah, so now I'm going to have to look at my aide Hadley, the official organization. What was the name of the organization? The National Flag Federation is circulating one flag throughout all 50 states. I think it's all 50. And we have
52, like Obama thought. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, you know, can I digress and tell you a funny story?
Of course you can.
When I used to live in Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. You know, the...
As you do. You know how that is, folks.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The Saudis insisted there were 52 states. So much, and they were so convinced there were 52 states that I started questioning whether or not something changed since I was in seventh grade geography. So I looked it up, and the only thing I can think of, the only way I can reason there would be 52, is they think that Hawaii and Alaska are states. There's 50 continental, then there's Hawaii and Alaska are 51 and 52. That's the only thing I could reason. But anyway, I digress. So the flag sojourn, it's going all around all 50 states.
Okay.
I don't know if it's going to Puerto Rico or D.C. Maybe that's 51 and 52, another way to think of it. But D.C., okay, so D.C.'s last. So it's coming, the flag is coming to Massachusetts, and it's in celebration of the 250th anniversary of the founding of the United States, or the Declaration of Independence, I should say. So we have it coming here. And my staff suggested to me, I think it was Owen and Hadley, they suggested to me that we should have it
at... Owen Bebo from the Tolkien books.
That's right. Owen Bebo, my chief of staff, who's made my HR director in Attleboro, and Hadley, my assistant. So they suggested we have it at the Battleship Cove on the USS Massachusetts. So we presented that to the MSA. The MSA presented that to the organizers of the Sojourn, and they agreed, let's have it on the USS Massachusetts. We've reached out to a high-profile elected official who I'm not going to name because this person has not yet confirmed attendance to give remarks. But this is it's a nice honor to have the flag as it's going all over the country to visit our our district, and it would be in Fall River in this case.
I certainly appreciate you extending that to Battleship Cove, which I think is much more appropriate than, you know, putting it over Ash Street or over the Dartmouth facility, which, you know, are designed to restrict freedom, right?
You know, I never even thought to have it at the jail in Dartmouth or New Bedford. Thought never even crossed my mind. It was talking with my staff about it, saying, hey, where would we have this? And they just quickly said, Battleship Cove. I said, that's a good point.
Sheriff, you've made some campus improvements, particularly the update on the units to be that are suicide resistant.
That's
talk about those
ongoing projects. So we hired a consultant who told us how to make the jail more suicide resistant. We did that my first month I was there in January of 2023. He gave us a report in April of 2023. And since then, we've either completed implementing those changes or we're still in the progress. So the in progress stuff are like the cells, and we have the cells have a lot of different ways you can hang yourself. And so what we're trying to do is retrofit the cells so you remove those ways you can hang yourself and make it more suicide resistant. That's a work in progress. For example, the beds, there's a lot of different ways you can hang yourself with a lot of the existing beds. So what we're doing is we're retrofitting the beds, rewelding them in ways that you wouldn't be able to do that or make it a lot more difficult. Some of the bars on the windows also could be used to hang yourself. So we're also putting screens, steel screens on those.
Yep.
So there's a bunch of different things we're doing. Other campus improvements, we had a lot of the razor wire and chain link fence around a lot of the areas of the campus that don't even have inmates. Chain link fence is so we tore that down. We're putting up wood guardrails around the parking lot just to make it look nicer.
Sure.
We got rid of a lot of the old trailers that were falling apart. I started that several years ago, and it took a little while to get rid of some of those. Some of them took longer than others, but you're just kind of sprucing up the campus. When people drive on the campus, it looks like somebody cares and somebody's thinking about it.
Having old trailers can be helpful. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Brubaker.
I have.
Remember what the inmates were using those old trailers for?
I don't.
They had women out there. They kept women out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And hooch, I think.
What was that called? Like concubine? No, it's called conjugal visits. Conjugal visits. Yeah, no, we don't do
that. You don't have those, right?
I don't think so. Not to my knowledge.
You hear that, young men? Don't go to jail. No conjugal visits. And ladies, obviously, as well. They have, you know, anyway. Sheriff, let's get back to the zoo. I love municipal finance. Mm-hmm. It's municipal finance time with the sheriff, former mayor of Attleboro.
Former state rep, and I was on the municipalities committee for a couple of years as well.
What do we do about that zoo? I don't want you to lose your animals out there. I think cities without zoos are secondary cities. Yeah. You don't want Attleboro to be that way. We certainly don't want New Bedford to be that way.
We are one of the, I think there's five accredited zoos, maybe three or five accredited zoos in the entire state. Mm-hmm. And there's only about 200 in the country, and we were one of them. And the zoo, in my opinion, needs to be made a priority, just like every other department. That's what we have to do about it. Don't treat it differently than any other department. When you start treating one department differently than another, that's when you're going to start running into budgeting issues. Now, some people might say, well, you know, police and fire, water and wastewater are much more important than a zoo. That is, you know, those are essential services as opposed to recreational services. And you, but when the city revenues grow by 2.5% every year, and the, you know, if that's what you have to work with, then you spread, everybody gets a 2.5% bump. That's, you know, you spread it evenly. That way you're not hurting. If you give somebody else a 4% bump and you give somebody else a 1% bump, then your compound, the department that got the 1% bump,
yep,
and I'm using drastic numbers, really dramatic numbers, you're compounding your problems for future. One thing you should never get in a habit of doing, and you really shouldn't do, it's bad for your credit rating. You shouldn't use free cash, again, free to be used on any general
right.
government
one-time
purpose.
One-time money, generally.
It's
right?
one-time money. That should never be used for salaries.
Right.
Not even as a stopgap. It's just a really bad idea. Use that one-time money for one-time purposes.
Like buying a baboon or something like that.
Yeah, you buy a dump truck or something, you know, if you need that.
Or a big elephant.
Yeah.
Sheriff, Bristol County, particularly the cities, are hotbeds for illegal aliens. How's your relationship with ICE these days?
We don't do anything with ICE. And basically, I changed the policy back in November. So under Tom, there was a 287G contract, right, which they housed ICE detainees for Tom. And then there was an incident that happened. I'm not going to describe that incident because I don't want to judge it in any which way. But an incident happened in May of 2020, and then the jail got sued, and people can read about what that happened. So the jail got sued. So I had to navigate that lawsuit, and the state didn't give us any assistance. The federal government didn't give us any assistance. They both pointed the finger back at each other and said, "No, you have to deal with it." So we settled for $800,000, mm-hmm, and the lawyers got, I think, about a third of that, $800,000. Sure. Then the 16, 17 plaintiffs got some divided up amount thereafter. But what that told me was that working with ICE and DHS, they were not a good law enforcement partner because they left us on our own. The jail was doing work for them, mm-hmm, and then when we got sued, they said, "No, you're on your own." It's like, well, we were helping you guys. It's something, you're on your own. And the attorney general of the state said, "No, you're on your own too," because they have to help you with that because you're doing work on their behalf. So from my point of view, I don't want to expose the staff or the organization or the taxpayers to any future liability. So because the DHS and ICE have shown to not be a good law enforcement partner, they abandoned us when we were sued, and that was something that there was nothing we could do. We ended up using civil money. Now, civil money is money raised by our civil division, so it's basically court process and paperwork.
Yep.
So it's not taxpayer money, but it's money we raise using taxpayer resources.
Sure.
To be clear. So, the state pays
for... You could use the money for other stuff, but you had to use it. Yeah.
Exactly. You know what I wanted to use that $800,000 for?
Buy an elephant?
No, not buy an elephant. Okay. I wanted to use that money... we could buy horses.
Horses!
I don't want an equestrian unit. My jail has no need for an equestrian unit. So
Hadley seems to be into it.
Excited about that.
Yeah.
But no, what I wanted to do is we have a contract with...
Don't let Mike Rodericks find out about this.
Oh, no, he knows about this. Yeah, they all
the equestrian
know
unit.
Yeah, no, we don't have anything to do with that. But I wanted to build a new building on the campus to house our civil department.
Okay.
Because we're renting a space across the street.
Are you going to use for horses?
For $150,000 a year.
I'm just trying to make
There's
it
a
laugh.
There's a Freud joke about horses, I'll tell you sometime. But... But I wanted to use that $800,000 to build a civil building so we don't have to pay $150,000 a year to rent out this space, which houses our civil building across the street. It would pay for itself pretty quickly.
Did you go to the convention?
I did not, no.
Oh,
no.
All right.
I should have gone. I really should have, but I it was my first Saturday to myself in a really long time. But, yeah.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back more with the sheriff of Bristol County and his equestrian unit. We're thinking about, we're lobbying him to build a horse unit. I'm joking. We'll be back. Welcome back to the program. We have Sheriff Haru here. Sheriff, why? Well, first of all, you don't hear music like that in the Middle East where you just got back from. But why did you go to the Middle East, Sheriff?
That's my place that I often go to vacation. I used to live there. I've been there 5 times. I think I've been to about 10 countries in the Middle East. And I've been to Israel, been to Palestine, lived in Saudi Arabia, Turkey.
Who do you prefer, Palestine or Israel?
I actually really enjoyed being in the Palestinian territory. It was much more laid back, much more relaxed. Yeah.
Right.
And I spent 5 days in Palestine, 5 days in, when I say Palestine, I'm talking about the Palestinian areas of the West Bank, but I also went outside of Gaza. I didn't go inside of Gaza, but I have a nice picture of me with like the wall of Gaza, like just maybe about 100 yards behind me.
Yep. Do you like to vacation in Northern Ireland too?
I used to live in London, so I've been all over Europe as well. And so that it's, but I like going places where you don't really, you see.
What about the Ukrainian border with Russia? Is that a good place to vacation?
I've started thinking about going to Ukraine, to Kiev. I've started thinking about that. But here's a video.
You don't watch the news, do you?
I watch the news. But see this video right here I'm showing? Those listeners can't see it, but this is actually a video I took on the Strait of Hormuz. And those are some of the tankers just off. Now, I'm on the Persian Gulf side. But you can see the tankers, but it's not a war zone. It's actually quite quiet out there.
Yeah, the water looks clean.
In 2003, one of the sickest I've ever gotten was swimming in the Persian Gulf because the runoff from sewerage and petrochemical companies,
right.
I got really sick. I wouldn't go back in the Persian Gulf again.
That's why he keeps coming back to this program, folks. He can put up with anything. Sheriff, I do appreciate it. Can you imagine it's already over?
I know. It was fun. Well, I hadn't seen you since February 4th. But I'll see you again, right? Hopefully in a month.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We'll get you back in a month.